Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. December 7th. Pearl Harbor Day. That was a big fiasco, wasn't it? Pearl Harbor Day? Pearl Harbor? 2007, 1942. Okay, let's talk about that. Well, up on, here comes, you know, once again, it was a false flag operation. We knew. Well, actually, it wasn't quite. It was a false flag miscommunication, I should say. Why? Because when there's a highway, it's called the King Kamehameha Highway on Oahu, and up there was a Army radio transmitter position number 26, which adds up to an 8, I might add. And they had detected the Japanese fleet coming in, and they knew they were headed for Pearl Harbor. Forget the radar. Now, realize also that down on the on another hill over by the Schofield Barracks was an ANF PS-8 radar, which I got to work on. It was later on replaced by what's called ANF PS-35. When I was at Point Arena, we had both of them. The ANF PS-8 had a range, oh, probably 80, 90 miles, maybe 100 miles, maybe even 120 miles on a nice day, which wasn't a lot. But it was enough to see the Japanese. But when they reported this into the Pentagon, you know, remember, we reporting agency in those days was very crude telephone lines, the Pentagon just chose to ignore the fact that this radar had in fact seen these Japanese fleet coming, or some fleet coming. I mean, maybe they had not recognized it yet, but remember, things were different in 1942. But anyway, actually, 1941, if I remember correctly. But anyway, this is what got us into the war, and that was the whole purpose, you know, to get into the war with Japan and Europe. Roosevelt definitely wanted to get us into the war. So, as a result of the miscommunication, as they called it, Pearl Harbor got hit. We lost 2,500 American lives and sunk a bunch of ships, mainly the USS Arizona, which is still there. It became a temple. And nothing's changed. Even today, it was real interesting. I was looking at a video yesterday of George Bush being out. He claimed he was outside the classroom when the World Trade Center got hit, the first one. He also claimed, oh, I must have been looking at a monitor somewhere when that first plane hit. But yet, in the news, it showed him inside when the second plane hit, getting briefed on it. So he already knew about it, you know, and it didn't even, the first plane hit wasn't even in the media till a few days later, so, because nobody knew where the videos were. The media wasn't there filming it, you know, per se. And so the song goes, Creeping Fascism, of course, last week, with the House H.R. 1959 passing, that took away our freedom of speech. It's on the internet. Look it up. You'll see what we're talking about. So how do we deal with all this stuff? It seems like it's getting worse. Well, it's getting worse for them, not for us. They're starting to believe their own lies. Of course, the latest one is that Iran has just recently stopped nuclear weapons testing and development program. And the bottom line is Iran stopped 3 years ago, and the whole world community knew about that. I'm not saying that Amitajan is, you know, the coolest guy around, but he does have his own blog now. If you look him up on the internet, you can go ahead and talk to Amitajan. So now you can talk to the president of Iran if you want, depending on what's going on there. So it's getting to be a smaller world. And I don't think the present executive branch of our U.S. constitutionally deprived guidance system of politics recognizes this. So what we have to do is use what's called divine intervention. And this was given to me and others back in 1981. And I never knew exactly how this was going to come to pass. But now I'm beginning to understand it. I remember when the Andromedans gave me the design for the Andromedan projector. I looked at that and I said, we can't make that. You know, it's got negative angles, two sets of them. It's the formation. It was hard enough to do the receptor, which took about 10 or 15 years to get one of those developed. But the projector is a double problem. And finally, we got better, you know, computer programs and better CNC machines and better this and better that. And, you know, obviously about a year ago, we started producing the first ones. And believe it or not, the first one that was actually made, the first group that was made, and they're currently even making on the larger ones, the newer ones have been machined now, but the older ones, was made with a holographic projector, believe it or not. It was a helium-cadmium laser that projected into a liquid solution an image. The image was a holographic image of the projector itself. And it was quite interesting to see this image in the solution, and gradually the solution solidified, giving us a, I would call it a resin copy of a large 7-inch projector. And, of course, that then needed some repair work. Once we had a bunch of failures on those, they weren't perfect, but finally we got one that was fairly decent. And then it was hand-worked into a model that could then be cast into a metal. So it was a very arduous and expensive and very long process to get this done. So I'm going to show you some of my latest work. And I'm sitting here with the chrysalidome on. And I've been wearing this more and more. It's a different thing to wear than the power dome, I'll tell you. When you wear one of these chrysalidomes, it just wakes you up. And it produces a very strong detoxification, very strong detox. And I'm not going to do a show on it tonight, but we will do a show. If you look at the www.paradigm.com website, and those of you that are new listeners, just type in Dr. Fred Bell in the Google search engine. It'll take you to my website, or our website, Paradigm. You'll see that we have these new 454 nanometer blue spectrum light sources. And these are made by Apollo Systems. We are an exclusive distributor for them now, new product. And they are amazing for depression, because if you're in a cabin all day long, or you're not in the wintertime where you're not seeing the sun, you do not manufacture enough vitamin D, your calcium levels fail, and your serotonin levels fail. So that's why they like to give people these MOA and SSRI drugs. MOA is monoamino acid, monoaminoamase inhibitor, and the SSRI causes serotonin to remain trapped in the brain, so that you have a better continuity of synaptic switching functions, which then enhances the aura, all drug-induced. When you start influencing the reuptake of any particular hormone structure in the body, you're asking for trouble, because the electrical fields go crazy, and eventually it covers up maybe depression for a short term, but for a long term, it's very dangerous, very detrimental to your health. So check that. We've got new products all the time coming up. Paradigm is an expanding company now, and we're moving into different areas, and we're taking on peripheral things that are incredibly important to enhance what we're already doing. And we're going to discuss tonight, we're going to talk about the projectors, and we're going to talk about quantum entanglement a little bit more than we did with Sean Morton the other night, 2 weeks ago when he was on. And so once you get into quantum entanglement and you understand the hologram, then it's possible to fix these administrative problems that we have. A few people using entanglement can change the entire system. And what I've chosen, me personally, what I feel we should focus on is the gold system in this country and bring the gold prices back down. Because, first of all, a lot of the metals, like, for example, let's talk about for a second quartz. Quartz is silicon dioxide. Silicon dioxide is a record place of the Akashic records. Akasha can be looked at as an ether that contains all possibilities in the hologram. It could be the substance of the hologram itself, if you wanted to look at it that way. So what happens is when you form a star, okay, the star explodes or casts out metal as it's cooling off, but depending on the cooling temperature of a star determines how much it will eject in mass, which, of course, some of that became the Earth, and it's spinning, and so then it being a molten mass spinning, it cools down into a circular object which in this case formed the earth. Well, gold is created in the hydrogen fusion process. And remember, the hydrogen atom is the atom of consciousness. So looking at the, and this is where cosmology hasn't quite got it yet, and I talk about that quite a bit in my Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light book. You may want to go over to page 247 and look at a hydrogen atom and look at what's what we call the quantum levels of the hydrogen atom. Wherein we're showing that we have two electrons on the first shell or the first orbit, and that's one wavelength to the nucleus. Then we have a second shell of electron as it moves out in the hydrogen. It's shifting in other atoms, like oxygen. It would be other electrons forming a bond between different different cohesive bonds between the atoms forming molecules. But in the atomic state, the hydrogen atom is shifting. It's got one electron, but it's shifting orbits. And when it gets out to the second orbit, the second energy shell, it's two wavelengths of quanta, of energy. Third orbit is three wavelengths. And when you get out between the third and the second orbit, you're coming out to what's called the Arupa and Rupa planes. This is the orbit where when these electrons stop and hover, as I talked about, they call it in the old books, the Dance of Shiva. For a long time, the quantum physics didn't think it stopped, but now when we get into entanglement, the electron definitely stops in order to entangle itself with something else, maybe another hydrogen atom that's not even connected physically. And when this entanglement process takes place, we start splitting the mental plane down. And, of course, the mental plane, when it splits down, energy follows thought, becomes the element of consciousness, the actual mechanism, the mechanical mechanism of consciousness that then thereby plays a very large important part into the quantum field effect of entanglement that scientists are now observing over and over again in many laboratories, which we'll reiterate on a bit. So you'll see that on page 247, realizing that that was written in 1999, and that was, 8 years ago. And so we were a little bit ahead of the time then. Well, we're way ahead of the time now, and hopefully we'll get the inside track finished. It's being worked on. I had to take a break from that to get into cosmology more, because I wanted to use more orthodox terms. And then, of course, during the hesitation of the electron around the hydrogen atom's nucleus, it shakes out the omegons, which contain the color element from the astral plane, and the leptons, which contains the gravity ingredient, sometimes called gravitons, the tau mesons, and all the other particles that go into the Standard Model String Theory, which isn't quite organized yet. And these are organized into little fields called toraxes, which then in a much more micro level starts to form strands in DNA. That's going to be in the book, but that's not what we're about tonight. Let's just look at the hydrogen atom on the quantum level and understand how it works and how we can change the gold price. Because, going back to gold, gold is an element that was created during the consciousness of the sun creating its Earth's orbits. And so, the Earth going into orbit. So therefore, when the Earth was formed, gold was already in it. So the amount of gold that's in the Earth now is not going to be increasing anymore. It's already there. You just have to find it. Whereas other elements like quartz and citrine grow and constantly change and replenish themselves and heal themselves and get larger. Remember quartz, because of the Akashic record gaining a mass at a tenth of a percent of its weight every 10 years, gold doesn't do that. So when we want to entangle consciousness with gold, we then therefore become able to go into the actual healing aspect of gold, or the greed aspect of gold, which has its two energies that go in gold. And obviously it's the greed aspect that the bankers, mortgage bankers, are basing their banking systems on, or lack of gold. And they pulled it in 1901. They did it in 1929 with the crash of the stock market. Now they're doing it now with the mortgage banking and causing people to lose their homes. Of course, they've been living out of their means anyway, so they just wait till people do that, and then they just pull in the reins. So this is a control factor, which then devalues the American dollar, makes trading very weak with the rest of the world, and this is all done on purpose by bankers that really control banks not only in the United States, but in Germany and other countries, in China, all these countries. So to go to the root of the problem, there's only one way, and that's to hit the gold standard. So that's what we want to entangle our minds with, is the gold standard. And that's why I say when you get your hologram systems and you start wearing your projectors and your projector systems, concentrate on bringing the price of gold down, not to buy it, but to bring it down for other reasons. If you choose to buy it when it comes down, do it. But it is coming down. If you look at the market, we've been playing with it a little bit, but we need more energy, more entanglement, because there's a lot of minds we have to entangle with out there that are trying to drive it up into inflation. So this is kind of the stuff that goes on all the time in the world. So now I'm going to go into the next phase of this and explain a little bit more about it. Well, as you know, we at Paradigm have developed, you know, two products. You know, I know we've talked about one is the one holographic projector that you wear, and the other one that you use to transmit the energy and play around with the world stage, as I call it. And, of course, this has long been needed, and it allows us to see deep within the universe and its mechanisms. Of course, the other product that I'm talking about is the Chrysalidome. And the Chrysalidome is a lightweight orgone-plated super-pyramided with the outer layer of natural pure diamond crystals. When worn on the head, the Chrysalidome accelerates the quantum entanglement focusing mode, and it accelerates it a lot. You believe me, when you're in a room with these four projectors, the standalones, and you're wearing one of these Chrysalidomes, it's pretty intense. In 1982, an amazing event took place. Alain Aspect performed one of the most incredible experiments of the 20th century. Alain and his team discovered that under certain circumstances, subatomic particles such as the electron are able to instantaneously communicate with each other regardless of the distance separating them. It doesn't matter whether they are 10 billion miles apart or right next to each other. Previously, it had been thought that any form of communication could not occur faster than the speed of light, which I have always said is 176 miles per second. This demonstration validated the theory in quantum mechanics called entanglement. University of London physicist David Bohm, spelled B-O-H-M, one of the vast cosmologists who worked physically with Albert Einstein, stated the objective reality does not exist. Despite its apparent solidity, the universe is at heart a phantasm, a gigantic, splendidly detailed hologram. I was really disappointed because I really wanted this guy on the show, but he unfortunately passed away a few years ago. And so when I was doing research on his work, his widow is still around, but I don't know if she should come on the show or not, but he worked with Einstein. This guy was David Bohm, was a famous British cosmologist, a very humble guy. Most of them are very arrogant and very, very accomplished. He's like the last of the quarterbacks, Brett Favre. Once he's gone, the Dan Marinos and John Elways and all the Joe Montanas, and I'd be the last of the big quarterbacks. We got the new generation with people like Peyton Manning and other others, but I mean, it's just this is the last of the quarterbacks to me. To make a hologram, the object of the photograph is first bathed in the light of the laser beam. In other words, we're going to make a hologram of a picture of a rose. Then a second laser beam is bounced off the reflected light of the first, and the resulting interference pattern, the area where the two laser beams commingle, is captured on film. When the film is developed, it looks like a meaningless swirl of light and dark lines. But as soon as it is developed, the film is illuminated by another laser beam, a three-dimensional image of the object appears. And that's how the systems work. You may not be able to see what's going on when you program your projector systems, the big standalones, using the one that you wear around your neck. Because remember, the one around your neck is quantifying your field, and it's split in two sides, which I'll get into in a minute. So, what happened to my test? 1, 2, 3. Test 1, 2, 3. Test 1, 2, 3. I had a problem with my microphone there. It seems to be back now. So anyway, when you have this image, okay, when you are working with the field and you have this image, okay, producing the field, you don't see the image when you're working with a projector system. But the output, of the way that we're doing it with a hologram, with a projector system, is the output, the outcome of the work is the message that we send. So the actual minds that are going to be affected, I remember the mental plane splitting the Rupa stage, which is, by the way, Rupa is the lower mental plane and Rupa is the higher mental plane. One is logic and one is spontaneity. It all splits out on the third level of the hydrogen atom, this energy. And so as a result of that, the interference pattern is created by when the fact that this energy reaches their minds, it interferes with their greedy intents and puts our higher aspired intents into their plans. That's what's happening, okay? Three-dimensionally, such images is not the only remarkable characteristic of holograms. Now we're talking about the rose. If a hologram of a rose is cut in half and then illuminated by a laser, each half will be found to contain the entire image of the rose. If the images are divided again and again, each piece will contain a smaller but intact version of the original image. So regardless of how you break this down, you're going to see the entire rose. The same thing happens in your bloodstream. As your brain gray matter changes, there's an actual holographic input in every single blood cell in your body, and they change correspondingly with the changes in your brain. The whole and every part nature of a hologram provides an entirely new way of understanding organization and order. Western science has long taught us to learn new ideas in a linear order. This is the old adage of the right brain approach without the spontaneity of creation given by the left brain. If we try and take apart something made holographically, we will not get the pieces of which it's made. We will only get smaller holes, smaller pieces. And that's really interesting, the way the hologram works. Very interesting. So, next part. The insight suggested to Baum another way of understanding aspects discovery. Baum, and we're talking about Alan Ayn here now. Baum believes the reason the subatomic particles are able to remain in contact with one another, regardless of the distance separating them, is not because they're sending some sort of mysterious signal back and forth, because their separativeness is an illusion. He argues that at some deeper level of reality, such particles are not individual entities, but are actually extensions of some fundamental something. And we just talked about that in the very beginning here. According to Bohm, the apparent faster-than-light connection between subatomic particles is really telling us that there is a deeper level of reality we are not privy to, a more complex dimension beyond our own. And he adds, the view of objects such as the subatomic particles appear as separate from one another because we are seeing only a portion of the reality. Such particles are not separate parts, but facets of the deeper and more underlying entity that is ultimately as holographic and indivisible as the previously mentioned rose. And since everything is in the physical reality is composed of these adions, the universe itself is a projection, a hologram. And I've been saying that for years and years and years, and somebody like David Baum is saying the same thing. Yeah, now cosmology starts to come around the corner here a little bit. So it gets to be more and more fun, as we would say. Now let me give you a little brief history of quantum mechanics. Galileo was the first person to estimate the speed of light. 7 years later, the Danish astronomer Olaf Rømer became the first scientist to calculate the speed of light by using astronomical observations of eclipses of the moons and Jupiter. In the late 1600s, Christian Huygens, by the way, Christian also invented the pendulum clock, just so you know, and Robert Hooke proposed that that light is a wave. And these guys were big vortex guys. They were into all kinds of vortex theories. In 1859, Gustav Kirchhoff, while noticing that metals turn colors in varying degrees of being heated, excuse me, proved a theorem about black body radiation. And we're going to get into that in my book and later on in the shows, because we are going a lot further than just the quantum effect. A black body is an object that absorbs all energies that fall upon it, and because it reflects no light, it appears black to the observer. Then as you heat an object, it gives off visible radiation and heat. In 1887, Heinrich Rudolf Hertz conducted his experiments that produced radio waves. That's why they call, you know, so many, 50 hertz, 60 hertz, etc. By chance, he noticed that a piece of zinc illuminated by ultraviolet light became electrically charged. Without knowing it, Hertz had discovered the photographic effect which links light with matter. In 1897, J.J. Johnson discovered the electron. Energy was a crucial element expressed as kinetic energy and as potential energy. Heat is energy, as we learn in high school physics, and entropy is the quality related to randomness. And in a lot of these big formulas, it's always going to end up, the entropy is what they're looking for, the randomness. That's what the thermodynamic physics are all about. In 1900, Max Planck proposed a theorem that energy does not grow or diminish continuously, but is rather always a multiple of physical quantum, the smallest amount of a physical quantity that can exist independently. Planck denoted this quality as HV, and it's kind of a squiggly-looking H, where V is a characteristic frequency of the system, and H is a fundamental constant, now known as Planck's constant. I have a frog in my throat. And if you look at those wind chimes that we have on the front page of the Paradyne website, the hydrogen chimes, which we've been people have been buying the heck out of those. They're really nice. They're popular. That's the exact, well, that's the V character. That's the V frequency of hydrogen atom. When you hear that, Planck's constant starts to release energy into your body. And he came up with a formula, obviously. Planck's constant, and the value of Planck's constant is 6.626 times 10 to the minus 34th joule seconds. Now, what is that? Okay, well, here's what it is. Remember, joule seconds is small. It's minus 34. A joule is a measurement of energy and eventually converts to horsepower. So eventually we end up, we go through and, ergs, you know, goes to ergs and then watts, and finally we get up to horsepower. And that was the formula. In the early 1900s, Niels Bohr began studying the hydrogen atom and learned that the electron jumped to different levels across a narrow frequency spectrum. As many of you know, in my work, I have always talked about the hydrogen atom's relationship to consciousness. I'm always harping on that. Niels Bohr began studying the hydrogen atom and learned that the electron jumped to different levels across a narrow frequency spectrum. And that's what we were talking about at the beginning here, page 247 in Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light. We talk about that. Einstein stated that experimentations in the photoelectric area and later moved started, you know, to do his experimentations in the photoelectric area with dark metals, and then he moved on to cosmology. In his quantum mechanics, Einstein coined a phrase, spooky action at a distance. And you're going to hear that a lot, spooky action at a distance, which was later demonstrated by Alan Aspect and others. I am sure most of you are somewhat familiar with his other works. In 1999, I proposed my work and published it through my book called Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light, that the electron in the hydrogen atom did not follow a normal orbital pattern as defined by science at the time. I proposed, that's Dr. Fred here, that the electron stopped at various times throughout its orbiting frequency, and during these times, other particles became available on our physical plane as we know it. This led to the development, obviously, of the patented Paradyne holographic projector. Now, let's go to the heart of quantum entanglement, okay? The birthplace of understanding and controlling the hologram. Okay, you can control this thing. I mean, example, when your brain expands, your blood cells change, always into the hologram. So you're like a mini hologram in the big hologram. Now, how does that affect the big hologram? It changes too. But it's always the same. You know, if you break it down where it is in that moment, the hologram grows. It's an illusion. Illusions change. You know, when you're watching a, a film. It's a bunch of what I call it, the Pleiadians call it cellulite illusion. And they call actors, there's a word, I forget the, they have a very clever term for actors. But anyway. Okay, if we were to take a cardboard box and on the center of one side make two small holes about an inch apart and project a photon at the box, it'll go through one of the holes. If we're just focusing on one of the holes, it'll go into the box. And it would appear to us that, although it would be going through both holes simultaneously. In fact, it would be as the photon is not only a particle but a wave. And this, of course, was discovered in 1923 by a Frenchman named Louis de Broglie. Broglie, by the way, is another one you should study. A quotation by Broglie referring to Einstein's special theory of relativity follows. This is what he said. After long reflection in solitude and meditation, I suddenly had the idea during the year 1923 that the discovery made by Einstein in 1905 should be generalized by expanding it to all material particles, notably to electrons. Now back to the cardboard box. Upon more careful examination, we will notice that the photon particles are shining through the holes in the box and then reflecting back out from the inside, back out towards the light source. If we were to stand sideways next to the box, look at it from a 90-degree angle, okay, we would notice the photons are also making a wave. This wave phenomenon was defined by Erwin Schrödinger in 1926. And his formula is, it looks like it, Hy equals an Hy. The symbol Y obviously stands for the wave function of the particle. It's not, it's a little Y with a center in it, so it looks kind of like a little torch. That's the way I can describe it. The symbol H stands for the operator, telling the wave what to do. When you begin to work with the Pyridine holographic projector, you will be the operator. The projector will generate the wave. Schrödinger's work brought the quantum theory to explain where several of the more important aspects are evident in these notions called probability and superposition. These are terms that you'll get to know more and more as I publish more work on this. When working with the holographic projector systems, probability is determined by the operator and superposition is determined by the operator's ability to focus. Now let's go back to the cardboard box here for a minute. Now we know the light or photons are individual particles and simultaneously move in waves. The motion of the waves within their own particle state creates what is called an interference pattern. In a sense, a photon first went through one hole, simultaneously both holes, and then appeared on the inside of the box. Here they generated an interference pattern as defined by Broglie. The best way I could describe that is imagine that you look out on the ocean, or I'm in a lake, and it's clear and it's a nice day, and you throw one rock into the lake, and it makes beautiful little ripples. Now you throw in 2 feet to the side of it another rock, and it makes nice little circles. But the circles, the wave circles from the first rock and the second crash into each other. That's called an interference pattern. And also, when you look at the projector, you'll see that it has, it's like it represents, if you lay it flat, you'll see that it has two round circular patterns. And if you were to imagine that projector in the water and you dropped a rock on one side of the projector and a rock on the other side, it would make an interference pattern. Well, you'd see it because it's in the water. But it does that anyway. And it's that interference pattern is where the intelligence is carried. And that interference pattern can be then sent out into the hologram, and it will interfere with things. That's kind of neat, like gold standards and things like that. So you start to get a gradual understanding of where we're coming from with all this stuff. Kind of interesting, anyway. Now, let's go back to the box and our source of light. As you remember, we are focusing the light beam on one hole, and the photons are seen at both sides. And, of course, we're generating this interference pattern. Now, this process, as I said, is not limited just to photons. The process was demonstrated by Thomas Young, a British physicist and a medical doctor around 1800. The Young experiment has been carried out with many entities we consider the particles, electrons, since the 1950s. Remember, what's his name? J.J. Thomas discovered the electron. I think I'll get into that in a bit. And atoms, they first are playing with electrons, neutrons, since the 70s. They're playing around with interference patterns, and then atoms in the 80s. So background electron interference patterns, 50s, neutrons, 70s, atoms since 80s. That's how science has progressed. Now, as the photons pass, and of course now, in the year 2000s, we're doing holographic interference patterns. That's way up there. Now, as the photons pass simultaneously through both holes in the box, creating the interference pattern, another term is expressed in the manifestation of a quantum principle called principle of superposition of states. Okay, remember that. Through a rock in the right side, through a rock to the left of the lake, through a rock to the right, wave patterns are coming. They bump each other. The waves from the two rocks are bumping each other. That's called superposition of states. And entanglement is an application of the superposition principle to a composite system of two or more subsystems. Okay, so now what does that mean? Well, that means this. I now have four rocks and two lakes, not the same lake. And so I am now throwing two rocks in one lake, creating a superposition principle of states. And now in this other lake, I am throwing in two rocks. And then that lake's a mile away, and it's creating an entanglement pattern or superposition pattern. And instantaneously, those two patterns are seeing each other. Why? Because I, the rock thrower, simultaneously threw four rocks, two in one lake and two in another. Obviously, I had a long arm to get that lake a mile away, but I did it. And because my intelligence, my consciousness, is aware that I threw two rocks in Lake A and two rocks in Lake B, my awareness... Okay, my awareness connected. That's called the quantum level of the entanglement. And the other one is the physical level of entanglement. There's two states, the physical and the quantum level. Physical is when the rocks hit the water, and the quantum is my consciousness realizing these two superposition states simultaneously. So now I have to turn away from the lake and not look at the lake and realize what I've done. By turning away from the lake, not observing the waves anymore, and realizing what I did, I have now sent a message into those both lakes simultaneously. A little weird, but think about it. And you start thinking about this, record this conversation that I'm doing, and go over and over it, and you'll start to see how this works. Okay? That's why the projector, the one you wear around your neck, you know, is one superposition of energy. The ones that are standalones are the other ones. So you set up the force between the two, and then you transmit it into the hologram. It's not that complicated once you get it. Now let me give you an example. We're going to take this to another level. Okay, we're going to use consciousness here. And science embraces the consciousness. As a matter of fact, it's the consciousness part that they have to separate, the quantum part, from the physical part, because the physical part... We don't want interference between the two. Otherwise, they can't get the measurement of instantaneously. But they do get that. And we'll explain that more later. Entanglement is an application of a superposition principle to a composite system of two or more subsystems. So having two lakes, each one is a subsystem now. Okay, so we have two subsystems. In the following example, we're going to have four lakes. I'm going to have two, and my girlfriend's going to have two. And so she's going to do the same thing, and we're going to communicate between her two lakes and my two lakes, taking it to another level. Okay? A subsystem here is a single particle. Okay, now that means my two lakes are a particle, and my girlfriend's two lakes are another subsystem, another particle. So now we've taken four rocks and created an event between two lakes, basically. Okay, and that's what we call a single particle, each lake. Here we have a particle, George, who can be in two states, silly or sad. We have a second particle, Sally, who can be in two states, quiet or noisy. George and Sally can be 1,000 miles apart. Suddenly, George becomes silly and loud. Silly is definitely a George trait, but loud is a Sally trait. If this happens, then automatically Sally will become sad, which is George's trait, and this will mingle with her quiet state. Okay? Think about that. All right? When this happens, the commingling in the subsystem of George and the subsystem of Sally, the entire system is called the entangled state. Okay, now how this would be a good example of this is, you have a friend, and that friend has you as a friend, and you have recognize characteristics of that friend, and you have similar characteristics of that friend. Maybe you laugh about the same thing, you cry about the same thing, and you share a certain study with the other friend. So therefore, there is a potential for entanglement there, but there is no direct intelligence created. But there is entanglement because you are hooked to your friend. This is the way it works. So now that your friend suddenly decides to call you on the telephone, okay, so you hear the phone ring, and you know right away it's your friend. You pick it up, and it's your friend. How did you know? Because of the entanglement, and the entanglement, that friend, by the commonality of their entanglement, their sharing of your desires and your sharing of their desires and joys, that gave a common line for a phone call to come, and the actual phone call is not the intelligence. It's the fact that you know when the phone rang who was calling you. That's the entanglement. That's the transmission of intelligence across the entanglement. Okay. And this, of course, interaction can occur at any distance. It doesn't matter if she's on the moon and calling you, and there'd be a slight delay if she was on the moon from the time that the electricity got here. There was a long wire on the telephone for you to answer that, because the speed of light can be measured easily between here and the moon. But the bottom line is, when that phone rang, you knew exactly, you know, your friend was on the other line telling you that you knew who was calling. Okay? You might have even known before it rang that person was going to call. The fact is, when the phone rang, you knew who the call was. That's instantaneous. It might have taken a second or two for the electricity from the phone ringer to get to your phone, limited by the speed of light, but you know who that phone was, who was on the other end. Quantum teleportation has, until recently, only been a thought experiment, but in 1977, two teams, headed by Anton Zellinger in Vienna, and another by Francisco Di Martini, I like that, he's a martini, in Rome, brought the idea of teleportation from imagination to reality. One of the problems when observing quantum energies is the mere process of observation destroys or collapses the wave function of the particle. We've talked about that. Properties of a momentum and position cannot be known to any given precision. Once measured, a quantum object is no longer in the fuzzy state in which quantum systems are in, and information is thus destroyed during the process of being attained. In my earlier work, going back 25 years ago, I wrote about this as a known fact in the near future science would realize and compensate for this in future experimentation. I wrote about that in my Death of Ignorance book, per se, exactly, as it's described now in the modern manuals. So, knowing that, okay, your friend called from the moon, you knew who was on the phone, but if you'd have called your friend earlier and said, call me in 5 minutes, that would have destroyed the entanglement of the spontaneity of the call. You'd already know what was coming. So that's what we're talking about here. So here's another way to handle it. First, George and Sally became entangled as they were before. The difference now is we want to send a message from George and Sally to acknowledge the message sent to her. So in other words, not only do we want to know who's on the phone when it rings, when this other person calls from the moon, but we also want them to know that we knew. Okay, that's the point in the case here. We want them to know that we knew they were calling, even though no verbal expression has taken place. George has a particle whose quantum state is unknown to him, Q. Sally wants to have a particle in the same state as his particle, Q. This means George wants Sally to have a particle whose state will also be Q. If George measures his particle, this would not be sufficient, since Q cannot fully be determined by a measurement. One reason is the uncertainty principle discovered by Werner Heisenberg, which states that we cannot measure the position or momentum of a quantum particle simultaneously, only one or the other. Okay, and that's what we've been talking about all along, because once again, consciousness applied to the measurement destroys it, because it's a spontaneity, it's a hologram, it's not a wire with an electron moving through it. This is a new way of thinking. Basically, we're sharing electrons now, but we got to share them consciously. Our electrons and our hydrogen atoms are entangling with hydrogen, electrons and other people's, during the moment of non-movement, when the electron stops in my body, the hydrogen atom, and somebody else's in their body, it stops at a resonant rate, and that's the entangled rate, the rate they resonate. And then these particles from other planes, dimensions, come down through, and that's, of course, the intelligence. It takes time to get this. It's kind of different, but it's it gets simple when you finally understand it. It gets real simple. Okay, so I'm going to backtrack here. If George measures his particle, this would not be sufficient since Q cannot be fully determined by measurement. Okay, and then we're talking about the Werner-Heisenberg. The other reason is that quantum particles are in superposition in several states at the same time once a measurement is taken. Okay, so in other words, we're throwing the rocks into the lakes, and these lakes, my two lakes, have a superposition where they harmonize. And my girlfriend's lakes, they get into a superposition when they harmonize. And so we never know the exact harmony between the four lakes, but it's there. Okay, this is the unknown, okay, at this point. But it is there because there's water, there's rocks, and there's movement, okay, and it's resonant. Okay, this is called the projection postulate, this not knowing of where these four lakes are interacting. But we know they are. So that's called the projection postulate. The particles projected into one of the states in superposition. Therefore, George cannot measure a state of his Q particle, which would be necessary for Sally in order to reconstruct her particle. Basically, in quantum mechanics, observing a particle destroys some of its information content. To accomplish this, the basic state of projection postulate, which entanglement allows George to teleport the state of his particle Q to Sally. Okay, now here we're going to, the act of teleportation sends Sally the state of George's particle Q, while destroying the quantum state for the particle he possesses. Okay, so he's transmitted his particle, but he's destroyed its quantum state. This process is not achieved by a pair of, this process is achieved by a pair of entangled particles, one possessed by George, and it is not the original particle state Q, and the other by Sally. Using entanglement in this way, the state of an object could be reconstructed and divided into two parts, a quantum part and a classical part. Okay, now the quantum part is the instantaneous thing. The classical part is the act of throwing, as I said earlier, the rock into the water. The quantum information can be transmitted instantaneously using entanglement. But that information cannot be used without the classical part of the information, which must be sent through a classical channel limited by the speed of light. Now, here we go back to our original thing. My friend, who have common interests, is on the moon. I'm here. They telephone me on a big long wire, a theoretical wire from the moon. It takes about a second for electricity to get here in that distance because the moon is about 250,000 miles away. And light moves at about that per second. So we have a delay of a second. But the moment that the phone rang, the classical part had taken place, I instantaneously knew that the call had been made. That's what they're trying to say there. Triple entanglement. Now, here's where it gets into the military applications and where we're going with this, too. Let's look at a more detailed application which both has encryption value to the military and also applies to the Pyridine holographic projector. As I said before, there are two channels for teleportation, a quantum channel and a classic channel. Okay, the classic channel is the telephone wire, and the quantum channel is the consciousness moving through the ethers instantaneously. The quantum channel consists of a pair of entangled particles, one held by George and the other held by Sally. The entanglement is an invisible connection between George and Sally. The connection must be preserved by keeping the particles isolated from the environment. A third party, Fred, gives George another particle, X. This X particle is entwined in the message sent from George and Sally. George can't read the information X and send it to Sally, because by the rules of quantum mechanics, the active reading measuring of data alters the information X unpredictably, and not all the information can be obtained. Because remember, Sally and George are playing with Q particles. George measures a joint property X of the particle Fred has sent to him, third-party entanglement, and this particle is entangled with Sally's. Because of this entanglement, Sally's particle responds immediately, giving her information. The rest of George, okay, Sally's particle responds immediately, giving her this information. The rest of it, George communicates to Sally by measuring the particle and sending her partial information through a classic channel. Once again, we're back to the telephone. Except now, we have a third person here that has told me that there's going to be a phone call. That's basically what we're saying. There's somebody's going to call, but not saying who. But it's our entanglement between the caller and the moon and me that makes me know who is going to receive the call. But this other person out here, Fred, has told me there will be a call. And that's what we're saying here. This information, tells Sally that she needs to do with her entangled particle in order to obtain a perfect transformation of Fred's particle into her own, completing the teleportation of Fred's particle. It is interesting that neither George nor Sally ever knew the state that one is sent and the other received, only that X has been transmitted. This process is called triple entanglement. This process is engaged when we use the laser in conjunction with the Pyridine holographic projector. Okay, now the laser. Ooh, here it comes. The laser. Now, when we talk about the laser, how many of you have ever looked at a laser shooting into a crystal? And you notice, ooh, there's a fuzzy little look to that. It's nice and fuzzy. What is that? Well, we'll explain that now. I've been using lasers for years and years and years. We're the first ones using lasers into crystals that became world famous. And they're on eBay. People are shooting lasers into crystals all over the world. We're the first to do it back in the early 70s, very early 70s, like 73 or so. The use of the laser beam projected into a crystal producing entangled photons is called spontaneous parametric down conversion. Spontaneous parametric down conversion. That's why we send lasers out with our holographic projectors, for that third entanglement reason. SPDC for short. When you shine a red or any other color laser into a crystal, you will quickly see a haze form around the surface of the crystal. Within this haze, you will see other colors than the color projected by the laser itself. So if you shine a red, like a red laser into a crystal, you'll immediately see the violet when you get up close to it, which is the other end of the spectrum, I might add. So therefore, all colors have to be present. This is because a coherent photon beam splits within the lattice of the crystal, creating photon doubles. When the photon undergoes this transformation, the sum of the frequencies to the resulting photons is equal to the frequency of the original photon. It split it into light, obviously. Photons in a pair in this way are entangled. Because photons come from the astral plane, that of self-illumination, they have automatically entangled with photons still present, unemitted from the astral plane. So now you have connection with the spirit world, or the nether world, if you want to call it that, and also the fourth dimension of time. Now, according to quantum mechanics, we have an entanglement between two planes, interdimensional, and when this state occurs, entanglement between two planes, we have opened the door to entanglement in a parallel universe. This fact cannot be denied, as the electron entangled with consciousness is everywhere and every when within the holographic nature of creation. The fact is verified by the fact of uncertainty principle as postulated by Werner Heisenberg, which I mentioned earlier, 1927. This applied in a pragmatic way allows thought to become the classic channel and the photons, like quanta, become the quantum channel. Both are quantified energies. Now here we've taken it to another level. Rather than having a telephone wire as a classic speed of light regulating channel, we are now using the crystal with the SPDC, the spontaneous parametric down conversion principle, as one classic channel, and the photons in our consciousness, like quanta, become the quantum channel, and both are quantified energy. So now you begin to see how adding the light and the lasers now quantifies this and makes it happen. Your thoughts become realities in the hologram that others must follow. Examples of quantified thought transmitted through a classic channel are as follows. You hear the phone ring, you know who is calling. You answer and your action confirms your caller to be the one whom you thought it was calling. Hence, we've already done that one. Here the thought of the act of thinking is on the phone calling you. Here the thought of the act of thinking who is on the phone calling you constitutes a classic channel, and the act of the caller constitutes a quantum act on the electron level, as quantitatively the caller decided to call you. This decision was instantaneous because the hologram has no time. The conversion that occurs, the conversation that occurs between you and the caller is the intelligence, which is the same as X was when Fred gave George information that was transmitted to Sally. This example is a basic entanglement of two hydrogen atoms that possess consciousness, and within the hydrogen atom, because it possesses consciousness, its quantum bands extend throughout space and time of the hologram. The same thing applies to remote viewing. The viewer and the target exchange quantum information as the mind and the viewer quantifies its objective. This is, by the way, some of this I'm talking and some of it I'm reading. This is out of my new book. When using the hologram, Paradigm holographic projector, it is important to focus on the thought you want to transform into the hologram. The projector that is worn around the neck becomes a classic channel transmitter. The Paradigm standalone projector becomes a quantum channel. Combined with both projectors, share both a quantum and classic and quantum channels, producing triple entanglement. At the moment the two exchange information, the classic and the quantum channel merge, creating a transmission. The wearer of the projector never knows when these two quantify each other, and because of that, X information is transmitted without interference and compromise. See? The final scenario of the Paradigm holographic projector system involves one personal transmitter, the unit worn around the neck, and up to four standalone projectors. Now, some people like Valerie Olmsted use eight. I've never used eight. Although various people have been using many more standalone projectors, four seems to be the amount required to produce many states of quantum entanglement. It's up to the individual, you, to find a balance. Arthur Eckert, currently a professor of quantum physics at the University of Cambridge, is one of the pioneers of quantum cryptography, showing how quantum entanglement with no locality can transmit classified information using entangled photons from one source to another. The encryption key comes into being only after the measurements are completed by the user. This is only one example of current military interests in the field. They want to use it at NORAD. They want to do the same thing with the classic quantum channels, satellite information from space down to the Earth. It's going all over the place, but we're still ahead of the field. Because they're not using lasers like we are. Another interesting thing is while you're working with it, shine the laser right onto the gemstone of the projector that you're wearing. And that would be like a fourth level of entanglement. This science can be used to transfer not only healing, but restabilize our monetary values, including gold prices. In this manner, it is possible to curb the greed that runs out of control on this planet and curb inflation worldwide. Using the Paradigm projector systems as an exercise, focus just on lowering the gold prices back to where they were 2 years ago. This simple exercise could have tremendous result if viewed from a higher purpose, because it only takes a clear focus for a vast result within the hologram. So it's not about I need this done, or it's not about that. It's just to see it clearly with no bias. The thing is, no bias. As soon as you start biasing, you start untangling things. No bias. Here the goal is not how many systems are being used, but the clarity of the intent, which is how the entanglement process is procured. Success in this manner is determined by a group effort. The group must form itself in an entangled manner. Matter is in the present, posturing in time. Antimatter is its opposite, potential, occurring just out of the present time. Quanta is the measurement between the two. Time, therefore, is current within Akasha, potential, that synchronizes itself in a quantum manner. This attraction of the two becomes the pathway of spirit. Spirit exists outside the hologram. When setting common goals for betterment of mankind and the infinite potential, Akasha is released through the beauty of the quantum exchange. Entanglement is a doorway wherein spirit can work through the hologram, closing the gap between matter and antimatter, which then releases the potential of an action, in this case for the betterment of mankind. Before the Big Bang, we were in a state of non-existence called Prealeia. After the Big Bang, we were in a state of manifestation called Manavantara. In the hologram, both states exist simultaneously. This is called Schrodinger's cat, if you ever want to get into physics. And energy directed by time animates consciousness, creating our illusion of existence. As I stated early on, it's the pattern of interference that illuminates everything. In other words, a disharmony between all our minds. Okay, and that gives us a pattern. The reality. If it was all coherent, there wouldn't be any existence. We'd be in the Prealeia state. As I stated early on, it's the pattern of interference that illuminates everything. Photons are the receptors for grounding into dark matter. Modern science considers dark matter to occupy 72% of the universe. The boson, a particle emitted from a hydrogen atom when an orbital electron momentarily pauses, gives the illusion of mass to the hologram. Quantum entanglement takes us into the rhythm of the hydrogen atom. This paralytic state is always accessible as a pathway during quantum entanglement. There is no distance between entangled quantum pairs. Time here is seen as a magnetically polarizing element of strong and weak nuclear forces, the momentum of gravity and the gravity of consciousness. And, of course, on the inside track, this is some of it, there's a lot more coming. If you look at the Pyridine holographic projector, you will see two satellite-looking dishes coupling by a simple pyramid. That's the little X pyramid in the middle. When an X coupling two sides together, this shape defines a holographic representation of all existence. The orientation of the individual pyramids with in each section of the correspondent unit of energy channels corresponds to the channels of DNA and completely down to the nuclear strings that resonate, creating all solids within the body and the universe. And so what we're doing here is we have the Fibonacci series repeated twice, because that in order to quantify something, you need to do that with living beings, living minds. You double up the Fibonacci series. In this receptor, it's only one representation of that. On the back of the projector, you will see the lines of the dual yon and mantran, which filters out any vibratory frequencies that do not coincide with the pure intent of accessing the hologram via entanglement procedures. The color of the gemstones located upon the bridges determines the quantum wave function of the user. And I find that high-level sensitives cannot use diamonds for the higher-level way. They like the yellow, the middle frequency, works better because they're already sensitive anyway. In the case of the standalone projector, a white stone is used as the primary design and work in spontaneous parametric down-conversion mode, the SPDC mode. So therefore, the color of the laser has more to do with it than the color of the stone in the wave function. Also, in the standalone version, there are provisions to mount the device on the surrounding wall or place them on a tabletop. Many people start with one standalone and progress into four over time. The reason is, I believe, the instantaneous results are a little bit overwhelming. They do have a tendency to speed one's life up a bit. Believe me, they do. I get a lot of questions about the amazing nuclear receptor and its interaction with the projector. The receptor is a scalar wave quantum transforming device, and the projector is a quantum entanglement projecting device. I'll repeat that now. The receptor is a scalar wave quantum transforming device, and the projector is a quantum entanglement projection device. The projector works through unification of human auric fields, allowing attainment of focus when wearing the projector. The receptor works via the DNA and the ribbon theory of superstrings, utilizing the geometry of the toric strings to lead DNA into respiraling, thus negating the false aging image projected through the quantum ignorance of humanity. See, the whole aging thing and despiraling of DNA is ignorance. This fixes that. Remember, at present, the hologram has a piece showing. How the greedy few are trying to capitalize on making the masses sick and unhealthy, thereby creating huge industries of orthodox health and energy, i.e., the big pharma petroleum industry. That's where the hologram is now. We've got to change it. The projector is a wave device. We do not muscle test you for a filter stone as in the receptor. Instead, we have used four gemstones to establish a harmonic wave function for projection. The diamond is the most intense and the amethyst is the least intense. We supply the projector with a natural cubic zirconian or diamond. If that is too powerful, then we can use a less powerful wave stone. When using the projector to change and focus the hologram, say, for example, the greedy influence from the greedy influence to a healing influence, the projector's quantum energy generates an interference pattern in the image of the operator's projected image. That image casts a shadow on the existing image, and the power of consciousness moves the reality illusion experienced by the masses. Although this is not an intended purpose, I get calls about winning or gambling at tables. You know, people start, well, how can I gamble with it? Usually the individual who calls me is in a personal gratification mode, which is fine, but in the gambling mode, there is a high astral presence. Greed runs strong on the lower astral planes, thereby clouding the gambler's intent. This presents an interference pattern on the entangled pairing, thus demanding a measurement of the location of the pairing quantum particles. Therefore, there will be no demonstrable result. This is a trap and needs to be taken into consideration. The same goes for healing. Visualize the person to be helped clearly, as visualizing is an optical photo, photonic event, and the second part, seeing the person well, quantum energizing, sends balancing cell-directing entangled electron pairs into that person's DNA. I hope this clarifies a few things, as this is a very advanced science. I fear we are well ahead of the curve, although science is hot on our heels. Now, of course, I'm going to go more into this in the inside track, the book I'm working on. So I think I'm out of time, way out of time probably, not even gone over. I'll see you next week, and that's it. Any questions, call 1-800-729-2603.